comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
It is talk radio like nowhere else on earth, and it's the show where you matter. Very quickly, let me remind you about our K-Files. The K-Files, that's the name of our free weekly newsletter, and it's really free. It's no strings attached, not a joke, really free. And we want you to get it. That way you won't be in the dark. And all you have to do, if you haven't subscribed, go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and click where it says K-Files. Can't miss it. Big link right in the middle of the screen. And you just click right there and subscribe. Also, let me encourage you, if you haven't yet done so, become a member here at the Kevin Smith Show. It's free to listen, absolutely free. But, you know, if you're a member, you would get to see the show tonight and every night. And then you would get to see some of the photographic or video evidence that we show for the things that we talk about, as we will do tonight. It's 23 cents a day. You can't beat that. That's a great deal. Take 23 cents down to the store. See what you can get. Any store. See what you can get for 23 cents. Nothing. Zip. Nada. Nema nishta. Nothing. But for 23 cents a day, you can be a member here and get a whole bunch of great stuff. You know, no doubt about it, we live in exciting times. Now, excitement can be positive or it can be negative. It comes in both varieties. Here lately, it seems that most all of the excitement has been mostly negative. The latest episode of Negative Thrills is, of course, this massive earthquake and tsunami in Japan. That event happened on March the 11th, but that was just the beginning. It was just the beginning. There's more to come. Tonight, my guest is going to be Walter Bosley. Walter is the author of Latitude 33, Key to the Kingdom. He is a publisher as well, and filmmaker. And Walter is formerly a U.S. Air Force OSI special agent. He's going to join me tonight to talk about this awesome and tragic event in Japan and what may be coming next. We'll also be talking about a massive anomaly off of the coast of Cozumel, which is, of course, a favorite vacation spot for millions upon millions of Americans, Canadians, and even Europeans. And that is brought to us tonight courtesy of one of our listeners who brought it to my attention, and I certainly want to thank him for that. Again, K-Files, if you haven't subscribed, be sure you do. It's free, and you can unsubscribe anytime you so desire to unsubscribe. Go to kevinsmithshow.com and click the link. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Walter Bosley, And he's been my guest on the show a number of times over the years. As a matter of fact, I actually met Walter at a movie premiere, a film premiere, in Sholo, Arizona. I believe that's where it was. Wasn't that, isn't that correct, Walter? Yeah, we got rid of the feedback. Can you hear me, Walter? Well, we cannot hear Walter. I don't know what happened to him. So we'll try to get him back on the line. I met Walter at the premiere of a film that I think a lot of folks, lots of folks, are familiar with. It's called Fast Walkers. And it's a great film. If you haven't seen that film, you need to see it. So tell you what, let's get Walter back on the line. A little music to cover us here, and then we'll be back.
If I could travel back in time tonight, I wouldn't waste a second more. I know that's quite an ironic thing to say when you're contemplating time travel.
All right, we are back, and Walter, are you with us?
Yes, I can barely hear you.
Okay, we can hear you just fine. I was saying, I think the first time I met you was in Sholo, Arizona, at the premiere of Fast Walkers, the film.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Now, let's see. This thing in Japan, Walter. There was this huge earthquake. It happened on March the 11th, 2:46 p.m. local time. And what happened following this huge earthquake, first, what happened during the earthquake was that especially the northern end of Japan was severely shaken. Biggest earthquake in recorded history for Japan. And then following that was a tsunami.
Right.
And this tsunami wiped out a big, big chunk of northern Japan. Prior to the earthquake, I believe it was the day before, there's video showing this. You can see the video on YouTube, but there's video showing a fleet of UFOs above the epicenter of that earthquake. Now, this fleet of UFOs was above what would be the epicenter in a few hours, and that's pretty interesting. But I've also received from one of our listeners information today that says today there was an earthquake under Mount Fuji. Now, back in October 1707, there was an 8.4 earthquake that rocked Honshu, Japan, followed by a number of large aftershocks, and then a quake under Mount Fuji. And then in December, which was a couple of months later, December in 1707, until and through January 1708, Mount Fuji exploded, and it was an explosive eruption. And she writes, "Sounds like history repeating itself." So there's some weird stuff happening with Japan right now. Many people would say it's all natural, tragic but natural. Other people are saying no, it's not natural at all. What do you know about, and what have you heard about, this earthquake and tsunami in Japan?
Well, I've probably been hearing the same, you know, the similar buzz that you've been hearing about the options, and I'll start with saying that I think it's what needs to be considered are one of three options. Number one, that this is just natural, that it's just plate tectonics, just what the Earth does, non-cataclysmic, relatively speaking, of course. Certainly for the people that it's affecting, it's cataclysmic on their level. And it's just something that we're going to see go around the rim of this plate that we're all connected to in certain parts of the associated with, you know, a pet theory of mine that I've always embraced or accepted, and that's polar shift. That, of course, is yes.
We're just listening to you, Walter.
Cataclysmic. If we're dealing with polar shift here, mm-hmm. And this is possibly a sign of the impending shift to occur. And then the third option is we're dealing possibly with the result of some type of technology, say an earthquake weapon or some other technology that, you know, it may not be an earthquake weapon as such, but that's one of the results of its use.
Okay, well, let me ask a question here. Let's take that second option and talk about it for just a minute, a polar shift. What evidence is there, if any, that this Japanese earthquake and tsunami would be related to a polar shift?
Well, it's logical that if the Earth is going to have a major, and I'm going to say again, cataclysmic polar shift, that has to do with the electromagnetics of the Earth itself. Now, we know that earthquakes are affected by the magnetics of the Earth. Some say that you can do things to manipulate the magnetosphere around the planet, and that's possibly how an earthquake weapon happens. But if you've got the Earth's poles about to flip or switch or move in a highly significant way, one of the things you're going to see is severe earthquake activity, and earthquake activity is going to grow more severe the closer you get to this massive polar shift. Because when we talk about a polar shift, we're talking about, you know, a land shift and oceans displaced and such. And
okay, you know, so you're talking about a geographical pole shift as opposed to a magnetic pole shift.
It's going to be, my understanding of the pole shift is that it's both. The magnetic pole shift is going to cause a geographical polar shift. That's my understanding.
Okay. All right, let's talk about that third option. The third option being a some type of earthquake weapon.
Right.
What evidence do you see that that might possibly be the case?
Well, we have the history related to Nikola Tesla and the things he was fooling around with in as early as the 1870s and 80s. We know that Tesla was, in the 20th century, there was some likely connection to doing things for the Defense Department, possibly the United States Navy during World War II, because we have the story of the agents of the Office of Naval Research allegedly seizing his personal notebooks and such upon his death. Now, if he were working for the DOD, or the War Department at that time, as it was called, if he was working with the Navy, Office of Naval Research, then what they took might have been what they rightfully owned based on whatever agreement he signed. A lot of people see this as, oh my gosh, the government stole it. Well, you know, it could be that the man signed on, and the things he was developing for them, you know, he would have, I can tell you the way these agreements work, he would have signed them over to them, and they rightfully owned it. And some of that might have been, you know, the earthquake weapon technology. And so that kind of serves the possibility. Also, we know that there is weather manipulation technology that exists. We have the interesting and sometimes mysterious harp, which, quite frankly, in my opinion, I think gets credited for a lot of things it has nothing to do with.
Well, that might be the case, but the truth about harp is that harp, in its specs, claimed, you know, when they put the specs out for the development of harp, it claimed that it needed the ability to do certain things, including looking below ground for caverns and bunkers deep in the earth. And there are scientists who have looked at those specs and have said that can trigger earthquakes. And we have the Secretary of Defense under Bill Clinton, by the name of Cohen, who said that such weapons do exist.
Sure.
And he even said, you know, with the ability to trigger earthquakes and hurricanes and so forth from a distance with an electromagnetic signal. And he cautioned that we have to make sure these don't fall into the hands of terrorists and terrorist organizations. So that's an admission that it exists.
Classic enemies, too, although they're probably developing the things. Another possibility, other than the HARP thing, and I think it's always interesting to explore and discuss HARP, but another thing that needs to be thrown into the mix is something that I learned from our fellow researcher, William Michael Mott, and that is the connection between activity at CERN, where the Atom Smasher is, and this earthquake. Apparently there was something activated shortly before the earthquake happened, and Mike directed me to an article, a very good article, that apparently points out that in these past bad earthquakes we've had recently, say in the last year or so, can be linked to activity at CERN, which he also points out the symbol. They have a statue in front of their facility that is Shiva the Destroyer, which is kind of interesting when you consider the implications. But so there we have, you know, as far as earthquake weaponry, we have Cohen's statements, we have what we know HARP can do, and we have this the CERN facility.
Mm-hmm.
It's all very interesting, and I don't discount the possibility that it is technology. The three that I mentioned are the three that I give the most credence to. Number one being that it is just natural, and it's not going to go any farther than a bad earthquake.
Well, on the note about CERN, wonder how it feels to be the scientist that knows that when he pushes the button and starts the engine at CERN, wonder how it feels to know when I push this button, thousands of people are going to die.
Well, if they're consciously doing it.
Well, remember, look, here's the deal. If there is a correlation, they know it.
That we hear from various sources, and, you know, a couple of them they had a technology and they misused it. In some stories, they abused it. It could be that they didn't realize that this effect was going on. However, you and I both know that the world we live in, things are analyzed a thousand different ways. So them being totally oblivious to that result, you know, you could question that.
No, look, if there is a correlation, they know it.
I'm inclined to agree with you.
Yeah. Okay, now, if it's earthquake technology, Walter, we've mentioned HARP, we've mentioned CERN, but they are not the only, those are not the only facilities that have the ability to trigger these earthquakes. China has weather modification technology. I don't know what kind, but I know they have it because they bragged about it prior to the Olympics. Russia's
and
got it.
China also has something else that factors in here, and that's a often belligerent attitude towards Japan.
Well, yeah, and but you know, in fairness, that goes both ways. And you know,
sure.
they're both kind of belligerent toward each other. The wounds and scars of World War II have not completely healed between those two nations.
Right, and then when you add to the current events of, you know, Japan, to help us out, owns some of our debt and buys our bonds. And wouldn't it be nice for China to, you know, have a bigger piece of us? And if China owns that technology and Japan doesn't, you know, if you're going to talk about, well, between the two, I could see China using something like that right now, because right now we're at our weakest that we've been in a while in many ways.
Well, like weakest that we've ever been.
Probably.
Yeah. But look, there's no way I can say that China did do this or did not do it. But
right.
let's think about this. China, as big as they are, as powerful as they are, and they've always been big and they've always been powerful, even when they were not an industrial giant as they are now.
Right.
They have never, with the exception of Tibet, they've never in history been expansionist. They've never tried to take over any place they didn't already have. With the exception, possibly, of Tibet. Now, you know, they would argue that it had been theirs and had broken away and they took it back. That's their point of view on it. So that, but their history is that they've never been expansionists. And so it would seem to me a little bit out of place to place the blame on China, although I would suspect they have the technology to do it. It doesn't fit their pattern. But you know,
however,
patterns are subject to changing.
The Chinese are known to back more belligerent organizations, organizations that could effectively carry out an expansionist policy while masking the Chinese. Their expansionist directly.
Yeah, I guess every nation does that, including us.
Sure.
And but look, you also have the possibility of the Russian technology, and in looking at Russia, a lot of times people have a very, very uninformed and I would say simplistic and unsophisticated view of Russia. Not everybody, but I mean, it does exist, and I would say the majority of Westerners are in that category. I'll pick up there when we come back. We have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Walter Bosley. And we're talking about this tragedy in Japan. As we went to break, Walter, I was talking about Russia and that people in the West particularly have, I think, a simplistic and unsophisticated view of Russia. They think that since the Cold War is over and Russia went through all the economic upheaval and chaos in their politics, that somehow, you know, they're a little bit behind the West. But when it comes to science and technology, some of the best science and technology is developed in Russia. And you know... just take a look at the their space fleet. we deployed the shuttle, and we said, wow, isn't that cool? And the Russians are still using that old clunky-looking Soyuz. Well, we've retired our fleet now, and or we are retiring it. I think there's one more flight of a shuttle, and then it's gone. And Soyuz is how we're going to get to the space station and back until we come up with something else.
Overtly.
Do what?
What you're talking about is how we're going to do it overtly.
Well, yeah. Yeah, you're right. But the point is, they build good submarines, they build good spacecraft, they build good high-tech stuff. And they do have, the last report that I had is they have four HAARP-type facilities. Plus there's one in Tomsk. And where else? I don't know. There's you know, a bunch of these things around the Earth. So there are a lot of candidates if it was done with an earthquake weapon. There are a lot of candidates, a lot of possibilities for where that could have come from. And HAARP is one of them, but it's not the only one. However, I had a caller either yesterday or the day before that mentioned that it's been confirmed that HAARP was active during the just before and during the earthquake.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that doesn't surprise me. And wouldn't it be interesting to know that if the Russian HAARP stations were active, is that what you were referring to, or the American HAARP that we know?
No, the actual HAARP, which is American.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know if our HAARP was on in response to the Russians having been on. It would be interesting to know what the Russian HAARP equivalent activity was. Perhaps we use one HAARP against another, or we try to, lessen the severity of what, you know, their HAARP is doing. We don't know, and that's what makes it all the more difficult to try to figure out.
We want to make it clear that we don't know that the Russian technology was on. So we're not blaming the Russians. Yeah, we're not blaming the Russians. We're just saying it's a possibility.
Right.
All right. Out of all of these three, you mentioned natural, that it just was a natural occurrence and it happened. Possible precursor, front-end event to a polar shift.
Which is also natural, but much more severe and cataclysmic.
Mm-hmm. And then possibly an earthquake weapon, an electromagnetic weapon. Of these three, what seems to you, based on what you have seen, what you have read, what you have heard, what seems to you to be the most likely?
Well, that's a two-tiered kind of answer there.
All right.
I think it's going to turn out to have just been a natural thing. I do recognize the possibility of any one of the three, but my gut feeling is that we're looking at something natural that's going to turn out to have been a natural event, but that still leaves the two possibilities. And even possibility one could mean that somewhere, anywhere on this side of the Pacific Rim, we've got a whopper coming. Could be on North America, could be in South America, and that's, we should be concerned about that. You know that I have been an advocate of the polar shift theory. I still accept that. I still think that that is going to happen. So I'm going with that. For my money, I think this is another sign of the impending polar shift to come.
Well, let me throw one more factor into the mix here. Mm-hmm. Because we mentioned that China does have weather modification technology, and we know so because they said so. prior to the Olympics. So is it possible they did it? Well, there is this. Since that earthquake and the tsunami and the resulting disaster to some nuclear plants in Japan, China has halted permits for construction of nuclear plants and has halted construction that's actually going on. Now, it may start up again, but they are reevaluating nuclear power. So that would that sort of signals that, at least seems to me, it sort of signals that it wasn't them.
Right, and that it was possibly, more likely, I mean, a natural occurrence. Because if it was someone else, if it was us, if it was the Russians, if it was them lighting up CERN or whatever it was, you know, they've got an intelligence apparatus enough to say, it wasn't us, but it was the other guys. And why, therefore, would they shut down their construction on, you know, nuclear energy sites if they knew that it was of, you know, artificial origin targeting Japan? I think that shows a sincere concern of natural occurrence.
Yeah, I think so. At least it seems that way to me. When you think about the possibility of the of it being actually a HAARP type weapon, I can't see it being China. And I'm not blaming Russia, but, you know, there's hostility between China and Russia and China and Japan. Not hostility. There's anger between the two over World War II. There is anger and a little bit above anger between Russia and Japan over who owns some of the islands that Japan says those are ours. You took them illegally in World War II. Russia's saying they're ours. Buzz off. And so there is that friction between Russia and Japan.
Sure. And your enemy's enemy, you know, or your enemy's friend kind of factors in there. So with them being friends with us, it's not unreasonable to wonder if, you know, Russia, you know, was doing something to Japan, also because they're our ally.
Yeah, but, you know, Russia is our ally, too, on many, many levels. And we have tremendous investments in Russia. They have tremendous investments in the United States. And so you would think, well, okay, they wouldn't want to do anything that's going to cause their investments to go south. So that sort of lets them off the hook.
To the natural explanation in my
opinion. Yeah, when you consider all the factors, and look, some people are saying that it was HAARP, and maybe it was. HAARP was on, apparently. I haven't confirmed that. I was told that, and the caller was going to send me a link to the page that talks about it, but I haven't seen that link yet. I don't think it's arrived. So maybe HAARP was on, and maybe HAARP did it, but then you have to question, why would we do that when we are trying desperately to get our noses above water economically here? And they're already saying that because of all the automobile plants being shut down in Japan, that it's going to affect negatively the production of automobiles here in the United States. So that's going to be a negative effect on the market. And in fact, the markets have already begun to drop.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't see us doing it on purpose. Do what?
The markets started feeling the effect the very day that it hit.
Well, yeah, and further drops as we get worse and worse news about those nuclear plants that are in crisis there in Japan. So I can't see us doing it on purpose anyway.
No, of course not. It doesn't make sense that it was us. So, you know, you got to look to the Russians and the Chinese, and we've just gone through the reasons why that doesn't seem to make sense.
But let me say this:
the accidental result of activating the machinery, the facility at CERN, and
it could be that accidental. But you know, let me say this, folks: we are not coming to the conclusion that it was natural.
Right.
What we're saying is, when you examine all of the evidence that's available to us right now, it seems that it was a natural occurrence. Now, there may be other evidence that we don't know about. Later, when we open the telephone lines, you can call in and tell us about if you have other evidence.
I would like to add also my comment that when I'm talking natural, I see no connection or impact whatsoever on the global warming, man-made global warming as a crisis theory involved in this. I think this is something that the Earth does naturally, did it long before us. If we cease to exist today, it would do it long after us. I think this is a natural thing that the Earth does. We live in an era in this civilization where we try to live in a bubble where, oh, nothing bad happens, nothing, you know, dynamic or cataclysmic happens, if it does, we must have done something wrong. And no, I for one don't believe that. And so basically what I'm saying is, if it was natural, no, it was not caused by people who use oil fuel, it was not caused by SUVs, it was not caused by using the wrong light bulb. Personally, this is my opinion, I think that's absurd. I just think this is something the Earth does.
Well, as a matter of fact, all around that Pacific Rim, you know, when you have something on that side, it's not long until you have another big one on this side.
Right.
And there's one fault line, the Juan de Fuca fault line or subduction zone, that runs from Northern California right up the coast, Oregon and Washington. And they say that thing is way, way overdue for a major quake. We have to take a break. We'll be back. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Walter Bosley. Walter, when we went away for break, we were just beginning to talk about the Juan de Fuca subduction zone. Now, let me say to our listeners, in the next segment of this show, we're going to Cozumel. We're going to be looking at a big anomaly off of the coast of Cozumel. Apparently it is, and we'll be talking about that. But let's talk about Juan de Fuca subduction subduction zone. The scientists say that we are way, way overdue for any big earthquake at any time right along that northwestern coast of the United States. And they're saying that it could produce a 9-point earthquake. Now, folks, I watched on television an explanation about the ratings, you know, 7-point, 8-point, 9-point earthquake. I'm not sure how all the math works, but the way they explained it on television was, if you look at the earthquake that devastated Haiti and compare it to this earthquake that was in Japan, The earthquake in Japan released 60 times more force, 60 times more than what hit Haiti. All right, so they're saying the Juan de Fuca zone is ripe, and at any time it could go. What do you know about that, Walter? What have you heard about that?
Well, pretty much, you know, probably the same stuff you've heard and a lot of us have heard, because this has been, you know, on the radar in a big way. And, of course, as you know, a year ago, we had some very interesting earthquake activity going on this time of year. I think that when you look at the data, and anybody can look at it, you are seeing a greater increase in more powerful earthquakes. Now, some people say, in the long view, well, we've only had seismology out there, you know, X number of decades and such, but we're talking about more intense earthquakes happening, bunching in recent years, and I think there's something to be concerned about there. Not to mention the Yellowstone bulge.
The Yellowstone thing is pretty concerning, because that bulge is growing by 3 inches a year. Now, 3 inches may not sound like a lot to some folks, but 3 inches upward bulge in the earth per year, how long does it take before that thing pops? And when it does, it's going to be, for a large part of the United States, hell on earth. For the entire planet, it will be like a nuclear winter for some time.
Right. You know, Kevin, what I find interesting about the Yellowstone bulge is, for years we've talked about when a pulse shift happens or when the big earthquakes hit, how our coastal lines will be greatly ravaged or destroyed, and the heartland will be the safe place to be. Well, not so fast. Now we've got the Yellowstone bulge, and when our coastlines are destroyed by this activity, be it natural or whatever, the Yellowstone bulge goes, and the heartland, the middle, is all messed up. So it's like you can't win for losing, and there's no place to go, which leads me to, you know, my personal position is there's nothing we can, if this is natural, there's nothing we've done to cause it. There's nothing we can do to stop it. As sure as everybody here talking and listening is going to die someday, sometimes these things just happen. You know, the meteor is going to slam into this planet one of these days. The earthquakes are going to happen. So, you know, the thing to do is,
don't worry, be happy.
Live your life and be as prepared as you can be, as a society, with the way you build things, and as an individual, just, you know, go about, you know, be prepared. And, you know, if you survive something that hits, you know, have the water, have the food, have the mobility, have the place, you know, that you'll go to for shelter. But other than that, I see a lot of hysteria over this stuff. And, you know, folks, you really, there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, you know something, Walter, it's kind of a morbid way to look at this, and but still it's a very realistic way, and that is, it is true that these great cataclysms are going to happen. Sooner or later, it's going to happen. There is a catastrophe coming to your neighborhood, sooner or later. Okay, but this is the thing that I was referring to as a little bit of a morbid way of looking at this. The people who don't survive it, in a way, they got out with the easier task, because the survivors are going to face real hardship if they are not prepared.
You know, could I throw out there that this kind of thing might be very well why, if you accept the idea of a human civilization having once been on Mars, for example, why they left Mars. mm-hmm. and came here was because came that day when the cataclysm hit that it was time to move. We can look to Mars and possibly other celestial bodies to see clues and hints that that this does happen and this has happened, and it might give us as a civilization suggestions on what to do. Certainly, we already know within human philosophy how to handle it, and that is to go on about your business.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, the thing with Mars, there are things we know for sure about Mars. We know that Mars once was covered with oceans.
Mm-hmm.
It would seem likely that there were also freshwater lakes, but certainly there were oceans. And geologists looking at pictures of Mars have identified wave action, against the shorelines and things like that. And if you think of Mars in that way, covered in oceans, probably covered in vegetation on the land masses, the continents, probably freshwater lakes. It's not hard to understand or to visualize that there was some civilization there.
Right.
Where some people then depart from the speculation is when we speculate that they came here. But, it's quite possible that civilization on Mars developed technologically to the point that they had the ability to go from there to here. Why would we think they wouldn't? We've developed the technology to go from here to there. So it seems quite possible to me. I know there are people that will buy into it to the point of saying, oh, yeah, that's absolutely how it happened. Well, I think it's very, very possible that people from there came here. I think it's possible, but I don't have enough information to be able to say that it did happen.
I think it's some of us.
You think we're the Martians?
Some of us are they.
Mm-hmm. Well, we might be. If so, I'm absolutely certain my people came from some place in the south of Mars. Yeah. I'm sure of it. Absolutely sure of it. What do you think country music on Mars was like?
Any warm place, because you can have the cold places. Every year we see winter storms and people dealing with ice and snow, and I ask myself, why in the hell do you people live there?
We have to step away for a break. We'll be back, and we'll be talking about Cozumel. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest this evening, Walter Bosley. And we are talking this evening, we have been talking about Japan. In this segment, we are going to deal with a mystery off of the coast of Cozumel. Now, Walter, previously on this show, when you were a guest on this show, you told us that as a U.S. Air Force OSI special agent, you were head of, I believe you said, counterintelligence at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Is that correct?
I was chief of the counterespionage operations branch of the Air Force OSI detachment at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Okay.
Between 96 and 99 for 3 years.
Okay. You would, being at Wright-Patterson, because we've all heard about, UFO crash remains and alien bodies and all that being taken to Wright-Patterson. Mm-hmm. You would have heard, you would have known about weird stuff like that. Maybe not that specifically, but that kind of weird stuff, anomalous stuff, you would have had to have known something about that. So let me ask you, have you ever heard about this anomaly off of the coast of Cozumel?
No. And you have to remember, in my duties, I was what you call, we used to jokingly call, cleared for weird. You know, I had the particular security clearance level I had because I had to be exposed to certain advanced Air Force technologies. And, you know, yeah, sometimes what you think of as weird stuff is, let's say, stored in some of the same facilities. So,
okay.
I was cleared for a lot, but you don't necessarily have access to everything because that, of course, is driven by a need to know. But in that time of the things I learned and was aware of, no. I have my ideas based on other things I'm involved with as to what possibly they could have a stake in hiding off the coast of Cozumel.
Okay, let's talk about Cozumel now. Those who are watching our TV channel are seeing a picture. This picture was sent to me by one of our listeners in California, as a matter of fact. And this is one picture that folks are looking at, but what we have in the lower left-hand corner of your screen is the picture that was sent to me. And then the bigger picture is that same one simply zoomed in. And this listener wanted to know, and I think it's a good question, wanted to know, what is that rectangular thing? So let me describe it for our radio audience. What we have is a Google Earth shot of Cozumel. And off the southwest side of Cozumel, between Cozumel and the Yucatan Peninsula, in the water, out in the water, away from the shore, there is a the water is showing up as a almost white blue. Okay, it's very light, almost white blue. It's got kind of a whitish blue color to it. But then there is this dark, very dark blue rectangle underwater. And this dark blue rectangle underwater measures about 5 miles long and about a mile and a half wide. It's big. Now, I've got several things to say about this photograph. But, Walter, to the extent that you can talk about what you think might be there, give us a clue or two, or just come out and tell us. What is it you think might be there?
Excuse me. Well, if it is, you know, it's not beyond reason to discuss the possibility that it, you know, the U.S. Navy could have something, you know, underwater down there. I mean, that is the Yucatan Peninsula, which is in our backyard.
Okay, so you when you say something underwater, do you mean like a base?
It looks like they've purposely obscured whatever's there. What you're looking at, that blue rectangle, to me, is an artifact of the image. And but my first thought was, okay, what are they obscuring? Because I pulled up a photo on Wikipedia, and of course that could be you know, cleared up. It's interesting. There's no higher resolution available, so you can't zoom in to see what would be there, if anything, for them to block. So going back to this photo, I say the blue rectangle is an artifact, and it's covering something. And again, could be some type of DoD technology, which, again, a lot of people, that gets people excited. They're like, oh my, there's DoD technology. Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So what? To me, the idea that the Navy's got some type of sensitive thing under the surface of the water there in our backyard, to me, is no big deal. I'm not going to lose sleep over it.
Let's not lose sight of the fact it may be something the Mexican government has there.
Exactly. It could be something the Mexican government has in association with us. You know, we don't know. It could be a submarine pen of some sort. We don't know.
All right. Well, let's zoom in a little closer and take a look at some of the places that I think have been tampered with in this picture, and see what you think about it. So when we zoom
throughout, the other possibility that I enjoy and that I think is a lot of fun is, you know, could it have something to do with ruins that somebody doesn't want us to know is down there?
Well, it could, because there are clear photographs of lakes, big lakes, high in the Andes.
Mm-hmm.
And those photographs clearly show buildings, big buildings, in the bottoms of those lakes. And, of course, it's been confirmed that there is a temple underneath Lake Titicaca. Okay, now, what we're looking at on the TV channel is the first place where I think there has been some photo tampering. We're looking at the zoomed-in picture, and I'm going to go back to a previous version of that picture. Now, if you look at this picture, you wouldn't notice at first, but you look very close at Cozumel, and what we see is a V-shaped area right in the center of Cozumel, where everything is, it's green, but it's smooth. On both sides of that, we're looking at the tops of hills. But when you look at the picture and let your eye just kind of take in the whole of Cozumel, you see a very smooth area. And on your TV screen, I've put green lines down the sides of the V, and it's a V shape that runs right up from the southern coast right up through the center of Cozumel. And that does not look natural to me. Walter, does it look natural to you?
Oh, no. No, there's something funny there with the image. again, it could be, is it when the satellite was taking the pictures? Is it the sections? You know, coming together and they mismatched, but my understanding of satellite technology today is that it doesn't do so much of that anymore, at least not satellites aimed at the planet. So it makes me wonder, what are they covering there?
All right, now.
Of course, if somebody who's listening has spent a lot of time on Cozumel and is very intimately familiar with the island, you know, call in. That could help.
Well, and I'll tell you this. We have people who are experts in signal intelligence that listen to this show and have called in before. They didn't say anything classified, but they explained some things technologically about the satellite. So I'm going to say that it's possible that all of this is as a result of something going haywire with the satellite. Having said that it's possible, I'm also going to show you, after I show all three areas that I think are anomalous here, I'm going to explain why, when taken together, the three together preclude this being something the satellite glitched. All right, so we have a V shape here. Okay, now the second area that I think is anomalous, I didn't notice until I blew this up and outlined the V shape. But when I did, I noticed that the left side of the V forms the right side of another anomalous area. So let's take a look at that. The right side of that anomalous area extends to the left, and there is an area that runs miles, maybe 5 or 6 miles. And it's just a vertical patch in the picture. Now, I'm going to take the green area away, all right? I'm going to take that green box away, and you just let your eye look at that and see. You can see that there is actually a patch there. It's rectangular. And one of the things that really settled it for me is that that patch, if you look at the lower left-hand corner of the patch, there's a roadway that extends all along that coast. And the lower left corner of that patch was done very sloppy, and it extends over the roadway. So it blocks out view of the roadway. If that were not a patch over the picture, then we would see the roadway continuing through it. That is a patch on the picture. So that's the second area. Now, what are your comments on that area?
Well, again, it could be that there's some type of military facility there. Now, you notice we have an airport symbol up north, just kind of west of the what looks like the that northern end bay up there. It could be that, you know, there's it looks like the, and I haven't been to Cozumel, I'm not intimately familiar with it, but basically what I'm looking at, from what I'm looking at here on the picture, it looks like all the civilian civilization up there is to the north, so it wouldn't surprise me if we've got this anomalous blue blur blocking something out on near the south end, and at the same time on the south end, we've got something covering something up. So if there's something going on Cozumel, it looks like it's on the south end by what we're seeing in this image. The most questionable imagery from the satellite seems to be in the southern half.
And, of course, that's where the southern end of the island is where we have it focused now. All right, now the third anomaly is the one that our listener was most concerned about, and it's this dark blue rectangle that's out in the ocean away from the coast of Cozumel. Judging by the fact that it's about a mile and a half wide, then that using that as a gauge, we're a mile and a half to 2 miles out into the ocean. And this thing is 5 miles long, running north to south. It's about a mile and a half wide. And the question, of course, is what is it? But here's why I think this is also photo tampering. All three of these areas, in my opinion, have been tampered with. And here's why I think this is photo tampering out in the ocean. If you look at this dark blue rectangle, and I'm going to take away the green box. Those who are watching, we have a red box that was originally on the photograph sent to me, marking the anomaly he wanted me to look at. Inside of that, I've put a green box outlining the area that I think is anomalous. Now, watch what happens when I take away that green box. If you look very, very carefully, you can see that there is this lighter colored rectangle of blue around the dark blue box. You see the color of the ocean, then let your eye follow from the ocean into the box, into the red box, and you see that you run into a rectangle of lighter blue around that dark blue box. I think that is a patch that's been put on, or some kind of blurring that's been done. I don't think we're looking at an actual artifact here. We're looking at something that is hiding some kind of artifact, or some type of facilities or whatever. But this dark blue rectangle with a lighter blue box around it is a patch that's been put on this picture. But let me explain now, Walter, why I think that these are patches and not a glitch in the system. The reason is because we have, if we start from left to right, we start with the dark blue box, dark blue rectangle out in the ocean. We can see clearly that its edges are fuzzy, right? But it's a rectangle. Its edges are fuzzy. Now we move from left to right. We move on land and we see the tall vertical patch that's been put onto the land. And it's not fuzzy at all. Not at all. We can see it when we take the green box away from it. We can see the edges of that left and right. And then we move to the right and we get to that V that's very big. And it's very smooth. For those who can't see this, we see normal terrain on the left and on the right, but in the center of that V shape, and it's a very straight line V. It's just flat and smooth and green. Okay? Because of the fact that we have fuzzy rectangle and a very clear rectangle, and then a V shape all in one photograph, that would be the camera on the satellite. That would be the satellite making three different kinds of glitches at once. Mm-hmm. I don't buy that. What do you think about it?
Well, so you're saying the satellite camera doesn't make three glitches at once. I don't think I followed you.
Well, that's it. You got three separate types of anomalies, not just three anomalies, but three separate types of anomalies in this picture, and that's telling us that this satellite malfunctioned in three ways over one area.
That's what you're saying, that if they're saying that the idea that it was a malfunction, right, yeah, there's too many of these things. Absolutely. So, okay, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, there's too many, and they're all different types.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, I think what this clearly does is, leads to the question is, what is actually on Cozumel? You know, who's been there that can tell us what's on Cozumel?
Now, what would be interesting is if we get a call from someone who says, I've been to that very spot on Cozumel. I've been to that southwestern coast, and I can tell you what's there. That will be very interesting, because I think that this particular spot on Cozumel has some significance. It's got to have some significance militarily, either to us, to the Mexicans, or to both. And for those who don't know, Cozumel is Mexico, okay? So it's either some significance to us, some significance to the Mexicans, or some significance to both. Maybe it's, as you said, a joint operation of some kind. Now, something big enough to cause that 5 mile long patch that's very blurry and dark blue with a very light blue rectangle around it, something that big to cause that big a patch, you know, I don't see that being a submarine pin. 5 miles long for submarines? 5 miles. I could see that as being an underwater base, possibly.
Yeah.
But and maybe it has some sub pins there, but it's not strictly a submarine base if it is a facility at all. It can't be simply a submarine base, because I think you could probably, you could probably park all of our submarines in a submarine pen that's 5 miles long.
well, you never know what all is there. But 5 miles, that'd be one hell of an installation, wouldn't it?
Well, it would be. And look, you have too. I've been on some large military bases. I haven't been on any that covered 5 miles. You may have been, but I've been on some large bases. I've even been at a base where you can land the airplane, taxi off the end of the runway, and go underground with the airplane. That was not in the United States and was not originally the property of the United States. It was built by someone else. But I've been in some large bases. I don't think I've been in a base that was 5 miles wide or 5 miles long. How about you?
Well, I was just looking up. I was for 6 months from September of 1996 through March of 1997, I was deployed to Prince Sultan Air Base outside of Al-Kharj, Saudi Arabia. And I was just looking up to see how big the full air base was, because it was pretty good sized. And unfortunately, I don't see anything right off here that gives those kinds of dimensions.
Usually that kind of stuff would be classified.
Exactly. Even, you know, I don't even see any kind of guess here. Although it does say that they've got, and I'm not sure, they show under runways, they show length and feet, 13,143 feet. Now, I don't know if that's in total runway space or if, you know, what
yeah.
they're trying to say there.
Well, I think the longest runway on the planet is at Area 51. It's 10,000.
Yeah. Well.
So that may be total footage of, you know, of all the runways.
Yeah.
Because usually, you know, you'll have...
That's one of the biggest mm-hmm. I've been on, is Prince Sultan. And, of course, that's not ours. It's where we were invited during Operation Southern Watch to enforce the no-fly zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. We have to back out of here for a break in about 40 seconds or so. When we come back, I'm going to open up the telephone lines because, as I tell you all the time, folks, I think of as many questions as I can. I do the best I can, but, hey, I'm not God, and so I can't think of it all. And you obviously will have some thoughts, maybe some questions, maybe some comments. And so we're going to open up the telephone lines on the other side of this upcoming break. And we'll invite you to join and to participate in the conversation via telephone and flash message if you're not in the USA or Canada. You can either call us or use the flash messages. USA and Canada, telephones only. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Walter Bosley. We're going to open up the telephone lines and invite our audience to join us here. The telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is 623-444-5889. That's the main number here in the studio. And we invite you to give us a call, join the conversation. In Canada and the USA, we do have a toll-free number, and it is 888-223-4599. We also have, for those who are not in the USA and they're not in Canada, we have a flash message option.
on my website. So you can call us at the main number, or if you're outside the USA or Canada, you can go to the website. Scroll down, you'll see Walter's picture, and to the right of that, you'll see the link that says Flash Message. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
I just went to Google Earth, and I went to Cozumel, Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
They do have some street views along that stretch. Only one slight problem.
Mm-hmm.
You can only go frontwards and backwards. You cannot do the 360.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, in this picture that we have, we can see that there are some street views, or there would be some street views. We can see a side street that comes off of that highway about midway up the picture, and it runs to the east. Apparently, it runs to some hills there in the east. We can see there's some sort of buildings, but it's very blurry, near the southern tip of Cozumel. But then we get into that smooth V area in the picture, and the question that I would have for you, Brent, is the street views, are they in that V area?
Just along that one main highway.
Okay.
Just along that one main highway.
So there's nothing up into that V area?
No.
Hmm.
And they only go frontwards and backwards. You cannot do a 360 view on those street views.
Wonder why.
I don't know. But I have another comment for Walter.
All right.
The reason people like me live in the northern part of the northern tier, there's four seasons here. Sometimes we get four seasons a week, but we do get four seasons.
Are you still with us, Walter?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you made the comment about people who live in cold areas, you know, why the hell are they living there? And so Brent has just answered you.
I've experienced the four seasons, and, you know, I'd still, me personally, excuse me, me personally, I just prefer the climates. That's all I was saying.
I know.
You know, I have the mountains here where I can experience the four seasons as well if I choose to. But, hey, you know, to each his own. No offense intended.
Well, I have to tell you, I'll say this to both of you. I love cold weather with snow. I like blizzards. I like it. I really do.
Come to Wyoming sometime. You'll love it.
Okay. Brent, thank you so much for the call. Well, that's interesting, isn't it, Walter? There are street views in that area left on the left side of the V. There are street views, but you can go forward and backward. You can't look at what's on the left and the right.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's I don't know what the usual parameters are of why some areas will have the 360 and why others won't. There could be a very mundane explanation for that, but it is kind of interesting. Makes you, you know, it could lend to the idea of, you know, maybe there's something they don't want you taking a full 360 look at.
Yeah, but you know, that would be so weird, because obviously if you drive down that highway, your head and your eyes can do a 360. So,
If you're there, there's not much, you know, there's a difference between you physically being there and millions of people around the world being able to get online and look at something on the computer on Google Earth, see?
Well, that's true.
They can't exactly control who's there. But, you know, you're not going to have 5 million people on the southern end of that island physically doing, you know. You might now, but we've talked about it.
Yeah, well, it could be, yeah.
Yeah. I'd also like to say that I prefer baseball to football, so let's see how many football fans will call in and call me to task for that preference.
Well, Walter, you were cleared for the weird, and I have to say that that proves it right there. You prefer baseball to football. I guess if you like baseball, you like cricket, right?
No, hell no. I was in Pakistan once, and I watched all these guys going nuts over these cricket finals, and my partner and I were shaking our head and laughing. You can have cricket, and you can have cricket on the East Coast, too, if you want to. But I will say that in my neighborhood, we have, in Southern California here, we have an active community, Indian and Pakistani community, that they have cricket matches occasionally at the school park near where I live. And I'm one of these people that if I'm watching a sporting event live, I can watch any. I'm not a cricket fan.
I'm not a baseball fan. To me, they're both just as exciting as each other. All right, now let's get back to this thing off of the coast of Cozumel. Thing that I looked for when I started doing a little background check and research for this show is UFO activity over Cozumel. And I find that it's fairly active. So we've said this could be the U.S. It could be a U.S. facility underwater that they're blocking our view of it. It could be a Mexican government facility underwater and they're blocking our view of it. It could be a joint base of some kind underwater. But there's another possibility. It could either be any of that or it could be a UFO base underwater. And then yet a fourth possibility, it could be a joint human extraterrestrial base. What do you think of those possibilities? They are way out on the front bumper of strange. What do you think of those possibilities?
Well, they're certainly possibilities, and they're fun to think about. They certainly could be cause for masking and covering from general public view. You know, so looking at it in that way, it's logical that it could be that.
One of the great tragedies that's happening ecologically was begun by the British Petroleum Company. Whether they did it on purpose or not is a whole different thing, but there is no question it was their oil rig in the Gulf that just wreaked havoc on the Gulf. And it was they who were dumping all of that core exit dispersant on the oil slick. Even after being told by the U.S. government to stop it, they went ahead anyway and did it. At least those are the reports. And now, you know, we're seeing the die-off of all these dolphins, you know, it's the just born dolphins, or in some cases they are aborted. And it's about the number of aborted or died shortly after birth dolphins. They said it's at a rate of about 10 times higher than normal. 10 times. Now that's significant. And then the manatees, same thing. They're dying off. Lots of bad stuff happening in the Gulf. And we have one of our listeners who lives down on the Gulf, down by the Gulf, and says there are tremors all around the Gulf all the time now. Is it possible that this facility, if it's down there, could actually be doing something that's contributing to all of that and using the oil spill as a mask?
It's possible, sure.
How likely do you think that would be? I'll let you mull that over. Let's take this call. We'll come back to that. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Well, hi, Kevin. Hi, Walter. I'm Ralph from Germany. And Although I didn't have the opportunity to listen to your show for the first hour, I'd simply like to say, Walter asked how many football fans might be calling in, and I have to tell you, without knowing any way about seasons, the season before, I was one of the guys who watched the last Super Bowl, and that's just what I wanted to tell you.
Well, you know, Ralph, American football is really American rugby.
Right, right. You are absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's a real great show if you watch it, even if you don't know anything about it.
It is a big production, but you know something? Real football—that's what the rest of the world plays.
And that's soccer. That's what we call soccer.
Yeah, we—that's what we call it. When you get down to the world championship for that every 4 years. That's a big production, too.
Absolutely. No doubt about that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
So, we were talking in the first hour, Ralph, about Japan. And we were talking about this earthquake and tsunami and whether it was a natural occurrence or whether perhaps it had been caused by some kind of technology. What do you think about that?
In general, I got two possibilities in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, of course, has to do with HAARP.
Mm-hmm.
I think it to be a possible reaction to some HAARP activities. On the other hand, knowing that we are getting closer to the galactical center within the next months and years, I also think it to be possible that this might be, this might also be, might have something to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know which consequences it will have if we pass this center, but it might very well be possible that we see some of some similar natural catastrophes in the very near future.
I think you're right. I think we very likely could see some natural disasters in the very near future. A break is taking over. Rolf, I want to thank you for calling us from Germany.
You're very welcome.
Good to hear from you. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Walter Bosley. Walter is the author of a book called Latitude 33, Key to the Kingdom. If you haven't read it, you need to get it. Also, he is a publisher and a lot of other things. He is formerly U.S. Air Force OSI Special Agent and Chief of Counterespionage at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. We're talking about some weird stuff. As he said, he was cleared for the weird. So we're talking about some weird stuff taking place around the world. And that includes tonight this massive earthquake and tsunami in Japan. Very tragic. And a lot of people are speculating that it was technologically based. A lot of people are speculating that it was not, that it was natural. So we're talking about that, but we're also talking about this anomalous photo of Cozumel that was sent to me by one of our listeners. As a matter of fact, a listener in California, and I appreciate him doing that. And it's got me intrigued. Walter, we've had on this show a guy who says that off the coast of near Puerto Rico is an undersea base, and that he's been in it. He's formerly U.S. Navy. Some people think he's telling the truth. Some people think he's not. But that is information that's out there that has been said right here on this show. We know that the Navy sort of quasi admits to undersea facilities, but and there is one that we know about for sure that NASA uses to train astronauts. So it's not really a stretch for us to think that it's very possible that this anomaly that we've been looking at is some kind of photo patch to cover something that's roughly that shape in the ocean, in the sea, off the coast of Cozumel. It's not a stretch to think that's possible.
Well, I think if you're talking about, say, like the NASA installation for training astronauts, I would guess that that would be more, and I'm going to caveat this, but my first guess would be that that would be a little bit closer to home, maybe mm-hmm. right off Florida or the Carolinas or the Gulf.
Yeah.
However, if the conditions are such that that little corner of Cozumel suits their purposes best, then yes, certainly it could be a NASA installation.
Yeah, but then why would it be covered in the photo? You can see, and here's why.
An installation that they don't want certain people to know is there. It could be that it's for a secret space program. It could be, you know, any number of reasons why they wouldn't want, you know, people to know it's there, or at least be able to see the details of it. See, that's the other thing. It could be that it's like, yeah, we don't care that you notice there's an anomaly there. Of course, you know, so what? So we got something off the coast, but you can't see the details.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, just off Google Earth.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's and that's very possible. But it would have to be some sort of, if it was NASA, it would have to be some sort of secret space stuff, which they publicly do not admit to anyway, of course, even being involved in anything secret.
My personal opinion is that any secret space program we have is DOD.
Yeah, well, you know, the this sort of miniature shuttle that the Air Force has that, you know, it was on a secret mission up in space, unmanned, for 2 or 3 months, and then they brought it back, and now they've sent it back up. That began as a NASA program, and then it was turned over to the Air Force, and then it was secret.
Sure.
Yeah, so that sort of stuff does happen. And, you know, look, the U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command website used to, it does not now, I think, but it used to in the year 2000, it listed astronauts that were attached to the U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command. It listed their names, the astronauts that were attached to that. Those were not NASA astronauts. And I pointed that out on the air in 2000, and there were people that got, some people got upset with me and said, I shouldn't be revealing that. And I said, well, heck, they put it on their website. They must want it public.
Yeah, you know, if it's on their website, then, you know, all bets are off.
Well, yeah, you know, but it listed the general and that was in charge of that, even had a photograph of him, had the names of the astronauts. And let me tell you something else. It had an application for people who are in the Army that are flyers to apply to the Army Space and Missile Defense Command Astronaut Corps. The application was online on their website.
One of the biggest smoking guns that the DOD does have a space program right there, if, you know, anyone doubts it. But, you know, somebody could call in and or write in and say, well, you know, the military attaches astronauts to NASA occasionally, and they could even point to a program where that's done. That does not preclude the military having its own space program.
Well, there were 26 astronauts on the list at that point.
We do. I'm all for it. I sure hope we do.
Yeah. Well, look, there were 26 astronauts on their list at that time.
Yeah.
And you can't point to 26 or even half that number being assigned to NASA. And today I am told that there are hundreds. And I don't know that that's a fact. But I do know it's a fact that on their website in the year 2000, they listed the astronauts in their astronaut corps, and that's not NASA. And I know for a fact they did that, and people that have been listening to this show since 2000 will remember that show. I gave you the link where you could go look at it yourself, and many of you did. And people were just amazed. It was right there on their website. Now, I've been back to their website a couple of times within the past couple of years, and I cannot find that. It may be there, but I can't find it. It's been completely redesigned. But, you know, Vandenberg Air Force Base, not Cape Canaveral, Vandenberg Air Force Base is the launch base for the shuttle if it's going to do a polar orbit. So let me ask you a question. Walter, have you ever heard of a mission where the shuttle did a polar orbit?
No, not personally.
No. Publicly?
Have we ever seen the shuttle launch from Vandenberg?
Do what?
Have we ever, the public, ever seen a shuttle launched from Vandenberg?
Apparently not.
I can't recall.
Not that we can recall. However, it's designated as the polar launch base for the space shuttle.
Right.
And also the polar launch base for satellites being put into polar orbit. So
my personal opinion is that manned missions do leave from Vandenberg. They're classified.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we're going to get the callers that say, anytime human beings go up in space, there are so many ways that you can tell that there's life support systems on, yada, yada, so forth. My argument is this. If they want to block those signals during a launch, they can do it.
Yes, they can.
That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, and by the way, you know what a white room is. I've been in a white room on numerous occasions where you have a conversation in this room and absolutely no electronic bugging will work. Okay, that's going to be it. That's a wrap for this evening, folks. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time. So long, everybody.